You know what you're listening to?
Is that a trick question?
It's the I Still Love This Game podcast with your host, Matthew Damien.
He's an idiot. Don't listen to he's an idiot.
Hello and welcome to episode 56 of the I Still Love This Game podcast. In today's show, we've got three games to talk about, and let's get right into it. And we're going to begin with me taking a breath and then talking about the Cavs versus Raptors. And the Raptors showed their teeth early with an excellent start from DeRozan and Lowry in the first quarter. The worst case scenario was appearing to unfold for Cleveland as they were playing with at a similar intensity in the first quarter as they did in the first round. But this is up against a much better team in the Toronto Raptors. J.R. Smith turned the game and maybe the entire series on its head with some incredible shooting. The Cavs also got production from Kyle Korver, along with Tristan Thompson, who contributed with a double-double off the bench, along with Jeff Green, who had 16 points. Kevin Love no-showed offensively, but he had 13 rebounds. LeBron was amazing in the way that he controlled the tempo of the game. Cleveland kept chipping away until they were within striking distance, and Toronto fell apart down the stretch. The Raptors now find themselves staring down the barrel of a must-win home game. If they drop Game 2, this series won't go beyond 5 games. Now, if you're the Raptors, you've only got yourself to blame for this. Forget the fact that they gave up 50 points to Smith, Green, and Thompson combined. They still had plenty of opportunities to win this game. They went a pathetic 5 of 25 or 5 of 26, I can't remember, or so in the fourth quarter. They've now lost 7 straight to the Cavaliers in the playoffs. But in 2016, they did find themselves down 1 game to none to the Miami Heat in the second round after they lost Game 1 in Toronto. So there is a precedent of them coming back in a similar situation. This series obviously isn't over yet. No series is ever decided by one game, unless if it's the 92 NBA Finals, Game 1, where Jordan pretty much ended that in a half, not in even a game. But if Cleveland gets serious production from their role players like they did in today's game, in addition to some dominant performances by LeBron, then Toronto will be in for a world of hurt. The Raptors can't allow themselves to panic though. Realistically, will we see another game like that from the Cavs bench, combined with a 5 of 25 or whatever it was in the fourth quarter by the Raptors? And despite all those things, the production from the Cavs bench and that horrific fourth quarter, the Raptors still only lost by 1 point. But the margin for error for the Raptors for the rest of this series is virtually nothing. If they lose Game 2, if they lose another home game, their chances of winning this series are pretty much gone. They have to win every home game from now on, and they also have to win at least one game in Cleveland for them to get out of trouble here. And it's funny that I'm saying for them to get out of trouble, because as good as they were in the regular season and also in the first round, and I know that they're going up against Cleveland and LeBron, but anything less than a trip to the NBA Finals has to be an extreme disappointment. And we're talking about them possibly being eliminated in 5 games or even less in the second round. Now, it goes without saying that Game 2 is an absolute must-win for them. It is as simple as that. And the Cavs must be thinking that if they get a 2-0 lead, and the way that Philly played in Game 1 against Boston, and I'll get to that in a minute, then the door may be wide open again for them to get back to the finals. Just think for a minute, though, and this is why I love the playoffs. This was a 1-point game, a 1-point margin of victory, and how the landscape of the entire Eastern Conference just shifted. It's absolutely brilliant. And speaking of shifting, let's shift over to the other side of the country. Well, it's a different country, actually. Let's go to the West Coast, though, and have a look at Warriors and Pelicans Game 2. And now this was more like it. Game 1 was such a kick to the balls, but Game 2 was more than made up for it. This was Steph Curry's return, but it was New Orleans that had something to prove after their embarrassment in Game 1. They showed up, and despite Davis, Rondo, and Holiday all playing well, none of them had the game of their lives, and they were in this right up to their necks. Much will be said about Draymond Green and the comments that Weber and Barkley said, so I may as well throw in my two cents as well. Weber is right. Green is a jack-of-all-trades kind of guy. He's only an all-star because of the team's success. The same goes for his Defensive Player of the Year award last year that should have gone to Rudy Gobert. People want to compare him to Rodman, but Rodman was the best rebounder in NBA history not named Wilt or Russell, and could literally guard all five positions. Remember, he guarded Shaq when Shaq was in Orlando. He guarded Karl Malone. He guarded Larry Bird. He guarded Michael Jordan. He guarded Magic Johnson. Quite honestly, you could say that at their peaks, those players' peaks of their careers, you could say that they were the greatest of their positions. Shaq's debatable, but he was very dominant. Clearly a limited skill set, but in 2001, at his peak, you could say he was the best player of all time at the center position. Karl Malone in 97 and 98, this is before Tim Duncan, you could say he was the best power forward of all time. Larry Bird, when he retired, there was no question he was the greatest small forward of all time. I still have him as the greatest small forward of all time. But when he retired, it wasn't even open for debate. Jordan still isn't open for debate. He's still by far and away the greatest shooting guard and the greatest player of all time. And Magic Johnson was clearly the greatest point guard of all time. And Rodman guarded them all in either the conference finals or the NBA finals. So that tells you everything you need to know about his versatility. And his ability to not just be versatile, but to be a lockdown defender at every one of these positions. You get certain players, LeBron James, who's versatile, but does a piss poor job of guarding those players. So it doesn't matter if they're versatile. If they can't get the job done, there's no point in putting them on the best player. The point I'm trying to make here about the Draymond Green and Rodman comparisons is Rodman is about 20 levels ahead of Draymond Green. And I don't even really want to continue the conversation much more than that. It's kind of disrespectful to the game to think that Rodman is close to, or Draymond Green is anywhere near Dennis Rodman. The only real comparison you could make was the fact that they were enigmas. That you didn't know what kind of temperament they would have. But Rodman showed up. Look, I'm not going to say that Rodman, his head was always there, because obviously San Antonio it wasn't. And you could also say in the 97 and the 98 playoff runs for the Bulls, he wasn't there either. He checked out. You know, he's getting ejected in, you know, the second or third quarter of big playoff games. And I guess that's where the difference really lies, if we want to break it down, is Draymond Green goes largely unchecked. His temper goes largely unchecked. He's obnoxious as hell, with the exception of Game 5 and being suspended in Game 5 of the 2016 Finals. Adam Silver does not go out of his... He lets it happen. He I wouldn't say he empowers it, but he definitely doesn't come down hard on him the way that David Stern used to come down hard on Rodman. And he lets him get away with murder. Just think back to the kick to the nuts that he gave Stephen Adams. There was no suspension there, and that was as blatant as you could possibly get. And I don't mind the trash talking. People get upset with the trash talking. Like, you think back to what he said to Paul Pierce and things like that. But the problem that I have with Draymond Green and his talking is, if you're going to talk, you better be the one that backs it up. The laughable thing about Green is it's Durant or Thompson or Curry. They're the ones that usually have to cash the check that Green has written. Put it this way. Would we respect Luke Longley if he talked a lot and it was Jordan or Pippen that had to back it up? Of course not. But let's get back to the game. And the Warriors went small with no real center. This was almost reminiscent of the lineup of death in 2015 that really won them a title. The problem is that this was good in spurts or at most quarters, but then can they go to it for an entire game or series or playoff run? The Warriors have won 6 straight in the playoffs against the Pelicans and 22 of the last 24 playoff games. Their last home playoff loss was Game 7 of the 2016 Finals. I still expect these levels of dominance to subside and New Orleans to bounce back at home. I want a good series, damn it. So I'm going to be expecting and hoping for that to happen. But in all fairness, as I said earlier, the Pelicans star players, they played well, but they didn't play the game of their lives. And they were, this was a very close game. It could have gone their way. You put them at home and Mirovic and some other role players step up for New Orleans. And you could, and a little bit more pressure is on, like, does Draymond Green play really well on the road? Not really. Like, sometimes he'll, not in pressure situations of playoffs, he can have some big games at home, but I can't think of a real dominant performance he's had on the road in the playoffs. So the point that I'm making is if he doesn't deliver as well as he did in game two, New Orleans clearly has a real good chance of winning game two, and that's in Oracle. Once they get to New Orleans, which showed to be a pretty good playoff crowd in the first round, and yeah, I like their chances of making this a long series. I'm hopeful, I'm praying that it's a long series. I don't want another short series. I hate short series, especially when the talent is pretty well balanced. Well, I shouldn't say that because there is a clear talent advantage for Golden State, but New Orleans is good enough to at least be competitive. And they match up well with them. So I wouldn't be crazy enough to pick New Orleans to bounce back from two games to none to win the series. But it wouldn't shock me if this goes deep. And then once the pressure happens, we have seen Golden State implode. I've referenced the 2016 finals twice in this segment alone. So let's do it for a third time. When the pressure has been right in their face, when the pressure has been at its highest, and Golden State has faced this pressure, they did crumble. So let's not be so quick to write them off, to write the Pelicans off just yet. And speaking of being wrong in predictions, boy oh boy, I could be really, really wrong about this one. And I'm obviously talking about the Celtics and Philadelphia series. I expected Tatum and Rozier to get them a couple of games, but those two combined for 57 points in game one. To put that in perspective, the 76ers minus Embiid had 70 points combined for their entire team. Rozier shot 7 from 9 from 3 points, and yes, that's not an error. When I checked the box score, I remember watching the game, the replay of the game, and just watching him just raining threes. And they've, at some point, they've got to view him as a star player, and I'll get to that in a minute, but they have to view him as... If they make the same mistake that Milwaukee did, and not view him as a critical piece of the Celtics offense, they're gonna lose just like Milwaukee did. Maybe not even as close as what Milwaukee lost. Al Horford, as also finished with 26 points himself, he was 10 from 12 from the field. And that was another thing that Milwaukee struggled in doing, was slowing down Al Horford. You could make an excuse for Milwaukee because they don't really have the big players inside to slow him down. Philadelphia has the depth and the talent to at least limit him. 10 for 12 for Horford is unacceptable. As I said before, Embiid posted a great stat line, but had trouble dealing with the energy of Baines and Horford. This was the kind of game that I truly expected to see during the Miami series from Philadelphia. And it was a painful experience. These type of losses are painful experiences, but they can also be used as a learning experience. Now, I wanted to talk about Rozier for a little bit. I'm going to do that now. Boston will have a dilemma on their hands next season when Irving is healthy. And it'll be a good dilemma. Now, if they don't trade Rozier, and at this point they might be crazy to trade Rozier because they may not realize what they have in this guy. If they don't trade him... Now, let me amend that. If a superstar comes up and becomes available for him, such as a Kawhi Leonard, then of course you pounce on that. But you don't trade him just to clear up minutes for Irving when he comes back. If it's strictly to get more minutes for Irving, play both of them together. What's wrong with going with a lineup of Rozier, Irving, Brown, Tatum, and Horford? Then of course you have Hayward, who was an all-star last season. Marcus Smart, who's played incredibly well with, you know, the fact, yeah, I get that he's shooting bad, but let's not forget that he had surgery on the tendon. It's not just a broken thumb, but surgery on a tendon 6 weeks ago. And he's never been a great shooter, but the energy that he plays with and the intensity that he plays with, he's a leader, man. And people follow his lead on that Celtics team. Sorry, I went on a little bit of a Marcus Smart rant there. But you would have Hayward, Marcus Smart, and Baines off the bench. And you fill in those pieces around them. Remember, they're going to have a pretty good pick as well, because when they traded down from the number one pick to the number three pick to get Tatum, and of course Philly traded up to get Fultz, the compensation that Boston got was the Lakers pick. So that could turn into a real nice addition as well. So they're just going to get younger and younger and younger, or they can use that pick to bring in a veteran. So, look, maybe they're a little bit small with that Rozier, Irving, Brown, and Tatum core. And of course, Horford as well, who's undersized at center. But there's a lot of energy there. And what we're seeing from them now is energy will compensate for the size. And they're very talented. All five of those guys, Horford included, can dribble, they can pass, they can shoot, they can rebound. I like what I'm seeing there. I really like what I'm seeing there. And speaking of Brown, I didn't even mention this. He didn't even play in game one. And what a classy move by Boston to put his career ahead of their playoff aspirations. San Antonio should have a look at this. And remember, everyone says that San Antonio is a class organization. What a load of BS. Boston is a class organization. When you look at how they've reacted to Jaylen Brown's injury, and Jaylen Brown is begging them to let him play, and they're like, not a chance. We are not risking it with you. And I think maybe they might be a little bit more realistic about their chances of advancing in the playoffs. But hey, shouldn't San Antonio also be realistic too, being out in the West, being the seventh seed or close to missing the playoffs entirely? Shouldn't they have figured, well, you know, if Kawhi Leonard isn't ready to come back, he's telling us he's not ready to come back, let's wait for him to be ready rather than pressuring him. Because that was really counterproductive anyway. But yeah, just compare the two. If you compare the two in very similar circumstances, I think it's obvious which one is the classier organization. So those were the three games that I had to catch up on. Tomorrow we only have one game, and that's Utah versus Houston. I think Houston will take that, as especially if Rubio's not playing. Even if Rubio comes back, which is not likely from the sounds of it, I would go with Houston. And we're going to address some mailbags and some other topic. So thanks for listening, guys. If it sounds like I'm sick, it's because I've got a little bit of a head cold. It's nothing serious. I will definitely be continuing this amazing streak of podcasts. I don't know where we're up to, but there will be one tomorrow. And I'll just keep going until, for whatever reason, it stops. Maybe I just burn out. Or maybe whatever, I don't know. There'll be something. I'm sure I won't be able to go all the way through. But it won't be for a lack of trying. So podcast tomorrow. I hope you enjoy the game tomorrow. I hope it'll be better than the first game. We have to hope, but realistically, I don't think it'll be that great. Send through your questions. Keep sending through those questions. And enjoy the game. And take care, guys. Thanks for listening.